everybody. Welcome to episode 678 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is an Aftershock Monday episode, and I'm going to talk a little bit about a few of the titles that are coming out this Wednesday from Aftershock. We've got A Walk Through Hell number 7. We've got A Dark Arc number 13 and Baby Teeth number 14. So I'm going to talk about them spoiler free from the preview copies I got, just to give you kind of an idea of what to expect. I may do a little spoiling as far as what's happened in these issues previously, but I won't talk about anything specifically that happens in these three issues. So look for them in your comic shops this Wednesday, January 16th. They're three really, really great titles. So I hope you're digging what Aftershock's putting out these days. So let me start with A Walk Through Hell number 7. It's from writer Garth Ennis. We've got art by Goran Sadzuka, colors by Yves Svorchina, and letters by Rob Steen. So we know so far that a couple of FBI agents walked into a warehouse at the Long Beach Pier and basically disappeared, like fell off the face of the earth, weren't able to contact them, and the powers that be called in the Long Beach Police Department SWAT team. Those guys entered the warehouse, came out 30 seconds later, all got in the back of their van, and did something unspeakable to each other. So when the two other FBI agents show up, the FBI agents that were most closely related, I guess you'd say, to the two that disappeared in the warehouse, they were working on the same case, they don't hesitate to go in. And when Sean McGregor walk into the warehouse, that's when the story really takes off. Everything's not what it seems. They see some really horrific stuff. They find the other two guys, Hunsecker and Goss, and they're not in good shape, let's say. And the warehouse is much bigger than it appears from the outside. Like, things are not what they appear to be. And this is a horror title, but a lot of people have talked about how it's such subtle horror when coming from Garth Ennis, who, you know, if you read things like the Crossed series that he wrote, you know exactly what I'm talking about, right? This guy is completely in your face, bloody horror, like not shock horror really, but it's intense horror. And it's always in service to the story. And like even those Cross books, as when I was reading them, I was thinking, man, this is bloody, this is gory, this is graphic, this is brutal. But yet I couldn't stop reading them because it was always about the characterization. The characters were so compelling. The stories were so compelling. So as brutal and disturbing as the images were sometimes, you just can't stop because it's well-crafted storytelling. It's well-paced. It's good characterization, like I said, and you just find yourself sucked in. You want to know what's going to happen next, and that's exactly the way A Walk Through Hell has been unfolding. It's terrifying in the way that it makes you stop and look at yourself, right? Like, first of all, you're not 100% sure what's going on as far as, are they alive? Are they dead? Are they in hell? Like, what is evil? What is it in us that does evil? What is each of us capable of? These FBI agents are supposed to be the quote-unquote good guys, but even they've done some things that maybe they shouldn't have. And so, you know, is that what this is? Is that why are they paying a price for that now? There are so many questions, and we haven't gotten a whole lot of answers. It's been a somewhat of a slow burn. But what Ennis has been doing in these issues so far is he's really drilling down into who these individuals are. And we're learning more and more about the agents. The agent in charge of the field office, Agent Driscoll, she, at the end of last issue, issue 6, entered the warehouse herself. She was tired of waiting. She was tired of, you know, nobody doing anything, everybody being too scared, you know, waiting for Long Beach PD to send another SWAT team. And then even if they showed up, would they go inside based on what happened to the previous SWAT team? These are her agents. These are her people. So she did enter the warehouse. And so she's in the warehouse in this issue and she's exploring. She's looking for her missing agents. And while she's doing this, we're getting her inner dialogue where she's kind of thinking about her missing agents and kind of the pluses and minuses of each individual person, what they brought to the team, why she teamed them up the way they did, what she felt this latest investigation, the Carnahan investigation, did to all of them. Can they survive it? Are they still alive? Like all this stuff, right? So it's giving us more insight into these characters than we've had before. And so again, it's very much a slow burn, but it's extremely enjoyable. And then the two agents that went in there, Shaw and McGregor, like I said, they've been in a lot longer and they've come face to face with somebody they thought they wouldn't ever see again. And that person's giving them answers, but they're not answers that Shaw and McGregor seem willing to accept. It seems too far-fetched. Despite everything they've seen inside this warehouse, they're not willing to accept the answers that they're given. But as a reader, you're like, okay, I see where we're going here. Now the pieces are starting to fall into place. But it's Garth Ennis, right? So I know there's going to be a twist coming. I know it's not as simple as, you know, 1 + 1 = 2. I can't wait to see what the next twist is. But the story is really starting to take shape. So I would guess 12 issues. It feels like we're about halfway there, maybe a little less than halfway, maybe a little more than halfway, but somewhere right around halfway. So I'm going to guess we're going to go 12 issues. But if Ennis wanted to continue the series in with some different characters, I would be totally in a kind of a different, a different setting. Make it somewhat of a anthology piece, if you will. Then I would be totally in for that, right? Like kind of like American Horror Story is, right? Like each season's a completely different stand on its own. So I think A Walk Through Hell is such a great title, and I think you could keep them in the same world, and you could have little crossover, a character here or there show up in later stories down the road. But it's super compelling. I feel it's one of those series where it's like, okay, like it's so good. I want more. Like as soon as I finish reading an issue, I'm like, okay, I want more. I want more answers. I want more of these characters. I want more of this story because it's so good. That being said, this issue 7 is really dense. There's a lot of dialogue in it and you do get a lot of story for your money. So I did appreciate that. I felt like it was a good meaty issue and we got to good chunk of story here. So can't wait for the next one. Really, really been digging A Walk Through Hell. And one last thing about A Walk Through Hell that makes it work so well is, I mentioned it being such a subtle horror story from Garth Ennis. And you could also use the term subtle to describe Goran Suzuka's art, because right around maybe once every issue, there's a scene where you just go, wait, what? Holy crap. Like, it's like an oh crap moment, right? Like, something brutal that you didn't expect at all. There's one each issue, and it's the last page on this issue. But the rest of the time, the art is so subtle, like, in terms of tension and suspense and being scary. And usually you think horror, I was talking about Crossed earlier, and you're just getting in a book like that, you're getting hit with one brutal image after another, and in a way you kind of stop paying attention to it. You get a little bit desensitized to it. You don't pay as much attention to those brutal scenes because there's another one coming on the next page or the page after that. But in this story, a lot of the tension, a lot of the drama, a lot of the suspense, a lot of the horror comes across through people's faces, and what you're reading on the page, and then the color and mood of the art, and then the expressions on people's faces. They're confronted with something that's terrible and horrible, and they're seeing one of those you know, awful images, whatever it is. To them, it's not an image. To them, it's real, right? Whether it be the scene in the back of the SWAT truck, or when Shaw McGregor first come across Shaw for the first time, or Shaw McGregor first come across Goss for the first time, I should say. Things like that. It's a really, really beautiful art, finely detailed and really disturbing at times from Goren Suzuka, so I want to make sure to mention his contribution as well. All right, up next, let me talk about Dark Arc number 13. It's from writer Cullen Bunn. We have art by Juan Doe and letters by Ryan Hill. If you've been following along with Dark Arc, the basic premise of the story is, okay, so Noah was charged by God with rescuing all the natural-born creatures of the earth from the big flood that God was going to send down to flood the earth and do kind of a cleansing and restart. Well, a sorcerer named Shrey has been charged with saving all the unnatural creatures of the world. So vampires, satyrs, goblins, those kind of things, right? Vampires. Did I say vampires? Griffins, naga, you know, snake people, all that kind of stuff. So he's been charged with doing whatever he can to save all the unnatural creatures. But not only that, he's also responsible to make sure that Noah's Ark survives as well, because when all these horrible monsters and creatures do continue to exist in the new world, they've got to have something to feed on, got to have people to terrorize, right? And so that's the story being told in Dark Ark. So although Shrey himself is a sorcerer and he's done unspeakable things, his family, innocent for the most part, and the deal he makes with the demons that he worships are that if he saves all these monsters, then in return the demons will allow Shrey to save his family. So we saw in at the end of issue 12 that Shrey and his family had made landfall, and the monsters were happy to be free of the Ark, and they're anxiously awaiting Noah's Ark to land. And, you know, monster is not the most patient in the world, but really they need to be, right? They need to give the chance for the animals that come from Noah's Ark to start breeding and producing more offspring. Same with the people. You know, if you have a big feast right when Noah's Ark lands and you kill everything and eat everything, then you're not going to have food in the long run, right? But we're not there yet. But what has happened is we saw at the end of last issue, issue 12, that Shrey and his Ark, with all the monsters, apparently weren't the first to land. We do see some, I think they're humans. We haven't seen their faces yet, but we've seen some others that look like they're a danger. And issue 13 is all about these creatures, these other beings who seem to pose a danger to both Shrey's family and the monsters. And although the monsters were, you know, ready to call off the truce, Shrey and his family are now fair game. Now that Shrey has delivered us to land and we're safe, and now all of a sudden with this new threat, it's like the enemy of my enemy is my friend all of a sudden. And so it's yet to be decided, it's yet to be discovered who these people are, who these other beings are, and what's going to happen with Shrey and his family and the monsters. So I kind of thought that this series would come to an end with issue 12, 13-ish, right? Once we knew landfall was imminent. But it seems like Cullen Bunn still has some other tricks up his sleeves. So I'm certainly happy that it's not coming to an end, because it's the pacing has picked up as the story's gone on. And which I really enjoy, it's making it really compelling. And, you know, much like a walk through hell, it's like, okay, Give me more. Let's go. I'm ready. I'm definitely in. It's well done, and Wando's art is perfectly suited for this type of story. It's not as detailed as the kind of art that I usually like, but the kind of the impressionist style that he uses is perfectly suited to tell this story in the ancient world, this, you know, biblical story with all these monsters, it gives it a really cool vibe, I'll say. But the other thing I was going to say is that you get the feeling that maybe you shouldn't be rooting for Shrey at various times in the story, right? You can, at least I couldn't help when I was reading it, but root for the guy. I mean, he's the main character of the story, but, and we don't see him do anything that's overtly like evil or terrible. You know, supposedly he has done those kind of things, but for the most part, it seems like he's just doing what he needs to do so that his family will survive. And I don't find that to be evil or bad or, you know, whatever label you want to put on it. He's just doing what he's got to do. So at various times, I've thought, man, I'm so interested in this guy. I'm rooting for him. I'm rooting for him to reach landfall and to get through this and to kind of outmaneuver the monsters and not be betrayed by them, not be killed by them. You know, you kind of want a quote unquote happy ending. But this is a dark arc. This is an arc filled with monsters, right? I mean, wouldn't the world be better off if there wasn't a happy ending and all these monsters sink down to the bottom of the, you know, ocean, all drown in the floodwaters? That was the whole point of cleansing the earth, right? To get rid of the evil. And so it's interesting and it's fun to be reading the story that has an antagonist or a protagonist, rather, a main character, let's put it that way, a main character that is sort of a bad guy. Again, we haven't seen him do super terrible things yet, but I wonder if that's coming, right, now that they've made landfall and they've discovered this new threat. So, not sure how long Dark Arc's going to go on. I could see it lasting maybe another couple issues, 3 or 4 issues maybe. I think the first volume was 5. So if they all follow that pattern, then maybe it's going to end with 15. Or maybe 20. I guess it all just depends on how much more story Cullen Bunn has to tell. Like I said, the pacing has picked up a little bit, so I could see everything get wrapped up in the next couple issues if he wants to get a little dense, or I could see it going until 20. But either way, I'm along for the ride, regardless if it's just a couple more issues or if it's another 7. All right, last book I'm going to talk about, Baby Teeth number 14. Kind of funny with some of the things that have been going on in A Walk Through Hell, Satan, demons, all that kind of stuff. And now we're also, you know, I'm also reading Baby Teeth at the same time, a story about a girl who was impregnated, immaculately conceived, and supposedly birthed the Antichrist. And we saw at the end of last issue, all the Ritters, the family, Sadie Ritter, she's the one that had the baby that supposedly is the Antichrist. Her sister Heather, their father, they had been separated along with the baby Clark. And Heather and Clark were supposedly in the Red Realm, which, you know, kind of hell you take it to be. And Sadie and her father have gone to rescue them. And finally, at the end of last issue, issue 13, we saw them reunited. And we also saw Satan show up, the devil, Lucifer himself. And so this issue, we're like, okay, big giant battle. That's what I was expecting. Big giant battle against Satan. Okay, that's not what goes down at all. It's way more interesting than that. Donnie Cates, that reminds me, I didn't give the creative team. Let me do that really quickly here. So written by Donnie Cates, co-creator and writer. Gary Brown, co-creator and artist. We have Mark Englert on colors and Taylor Esposito on letters. So getting back to what I was saying, Donnie Cates has given us a big twist in this issue. Things are much more interesting than the typical Antichrist type story, right? Which is, you know, kind of what I was using as sort of an excuse to not get my hopes up, expectations really high for the series. And I was also almost reluctant to read it. It's another one of those titles where I'm like, well, it's Aftershock, so it's got to be good. So even though, you know, Antichrist, blah, 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 and that, you know, religious overtones, nah, not for me. I don't do that anymore with Aftershock titles because they've proven me wrong time and time again. The titles are so good that invariably I end up reading them. So now I just trust, no matter what the concept is, that it's going to turn out to be it's going to exceed my expectations and be not quite what I expect. So Baby Teeth is definitely that. We don't get a lot of movement in this issue as far as characterization, right? Like I said, the Ritters have reunited, but they haven't really exchanged stories yet. We don't know the different perspectives of the characters in terms of each of them getting all the others up to speed on what's been going on. This is really an issue about Satan and his part in the story. And again, it's not what you expect it to be. It was a total curveball. But it, just like the other two issues that I'm talking about in this episode, A Walk Through Hell and Dark Ark, another super compelling read, couldn't put it down, wanted more as soon as it was over. Because with the revelations in this issue, it's like everything has been turned on its head, and it seems like there's a lot more story to tell, but it's also like, okay, well, now what? Now that we've discovered things are not at all what they seem, what are the Ritters going to do now? What's the next step? Like, it's completely out. There's no way to predict, no way to know what's going to happen now. What's the journey Donny Cates is going to take us on? So, really, really excited to read more of Baby Teeth. I think I heard quite a few people talking about it when it first came out, because Donny Cates was like the darling of the comic book world at that time. You know, he had a couple of other titles that had really blown up, and it was before he was writing everything under the sun over at Marvel. And so everybody was really paying attention. I was hearing a few people talk about Baby Teeth. I was hearing a few people talk about Redneck, some of the other, that's another Image title that he writes, and a couple of other things that he had done that people were just lauding, right? Like, they're saying it was this so good, giving it all kinds of critical acclaim. But now this has been out for a while, you know, this is issue 14. I haven't heard a lot of people talking about it lately, and I'm hoping that there's people are still reading it, because it deserves to be read. It's really, really good. And I'm just curious what a lot of the other people think. Much like the art by Juan Doe on Dark Ark, the art by Gary Brown here is not as detailed as I normally like my comic art to be, especially in the backgrounds. But again, it suits this tone of the story so well. It has from the beginning, with demons and monsters and a lot of emotion, the color by Mark Englert, a lot of reds, a lot of oranges, kind of those types of colors that, based on the setting, you know, the Red Realm, a lot of blood in this book, a lot of red, a lot of symbolism. So it's worked out really, really well. And again, not like your typical superhero type art at all in this book. But I think that if it had that type of art, it would sort of cheapen the story. The story would seem a little plastic, I don't know, it wouldn't seem as real, wouldn't seem as visceral. I guess that's what it all comes down to. There's so much texture and tone in the work that both Gary Brown does as an artist and Mark Englert does as the colorist. So the entire creative team, including Taylor Esposito, who gets to drop a very appropriate censored box in this issue that I'm very pleased that he got to put. They all do a great job, and the entire creative team, really, really, really great job. So, like I said, three of the best titles that Aftershock puts out are all coming out this Wednesday. Hope you're reading all three of these books. They're really, really good. I would say the only book currently coming out from Aftershock that tops any of these is Hot Lunch Special, which is my favorite book from Aftershock that's coming out right now. But these are all very worthy of your time. They're all really, really great reads. So I hope you take the time to pick them up, and certainly let me know what you think. So thanks for joining, everybody. As always, please tell your friends about us. Subscribe and rate us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever platform you use. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, all past episodes of the podcast are available on all those platforms, as well as at lrmonline.com. While you're at the site, please check out all the other pop culture coverage of your favorite and upcoming movies and TV shows. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, I want to thank you all for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.